When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics podcast in association with 23. This is the show that combines our love of football and very average Sunday league playing experiences with our knowledge of football statistics and data analytics. It's episode 33 and we're back on the recruitment hunt this week. My name is Mark Carey and joining me as ever is Ryan Bailey. How are you, mate?
Mark, I'm good. Thank you. I'm good. How has your week been?
Pretty good, yeah. Actually, part of my working week this week is going to be slightly incorporated into this episode because I've been doing a bit of actually profiling of some players as part of my job, which is the fun part. And that's going to be very relevant to what we're talking about this week. So how my week has been may actually come up in what we're talking about.
Well, that's always good when we can link the two. I like to be able to facilitate that, so I'm looking forward to that then. Did you see on Monday that the Premier League Hall of Fame was announced? First two inductees were Thierry Henry and Alan Shearer. Thoughts?
Thoughts? Yeah, I mean, yeah, fair enough, rightly so. Yeah, I did. I watched some of the videos on the Sky Sports YouTube app, which was really good to see. And I mean, yeah, it's like prime our era when we were growing up, seeing Thierry Henry and Alan Shearer. I was going to say in their prime, certainly Thierry Henry, Alan Shearer probably a little bit before our time in terms of his prime, I'd say.
I was about to say.
But yeah, there's no denying that they are deserving of the Hall of Fame, wouldn't you agree?
I think you would have put money on those two probably, wouldn't you? I can't really find much argument personally. I will come on to in a moment a point that I saw of people who did find an argument, which you might find interesting.
unpopular opinions
we're all about that on this show. First of all though, I was interested to know, so basically you can now select on the Premier League website who you would then add as your third inductee. I believe that the fans are going to have the choice and then that person will be inducted. So I mean, there's a shortlist. I shan't read them all out, but all the biggies who you would imagine would be on there are on there. But if I could probably guess who yours would be, but I'm interested to know, who do you think slot number three should be in the Premier League Hall of Fame?
In terms of guessing who I think it would be, I imagine you think I'm going to say Steven Gerrard.
I would put my house on it to go back to a thing we've said before. Yes, I probably would if I were to guess. Is that not the case?
Well, I mean, I'm just second guessing what you're thinking I'm going to say. But when you're thinking of Hall of Fame, I suppose you're thinking of people who have obviously achieved a lot as much as played well. And in terms of the Premier League, Steven Gerrard has been one of the best midfielders to ever grace the game. I think that's fair to say. But he never clinched that Premier League, but it was a product of the team that he was in, more so than his own ability. There's plenty of examples of players who are more than deserving of winning the league based on their own ability, but they just weren't in the right team. And the opposite has been true as well. I think, no disrespect to Luke Chadwick, I think I've cited him before, but he has a Premier League medal, and he is, he couldn't lace Steven Gerrard's boots. So there's certain players who should be more deserving of titles if we were thinking of it in terms of the Hall of Fame in that regard. But Gerrard would certainly be up there for his ability. I don't think anyone could argue with that, right?
No, I agree. I was wondering, do you think that longevity has anything to do with it at the same time? Because I was looking down the list of nominees for the third place. And there are players there who were active for 20 years, which is, players like Rio Ferdinand, John Terry, Frank Lampard. They've kind of got 20-year careers in the Premier League. And then you've got players like Eric Cantona who are in there, or David Beckham, for instance, who obviously stars of the Premier League, but didn't quite, they had sort of maybe 5-7 years or that kind of thing. Beckham longer, I think. But Cantona, I think, was 5 years in the Premier League. Do you think that has any bearing on sort of deservingness, you know, because Gareth Barry's not in the nomination shortlist.
Yeah, I know. I do think it is a good point, and it's something where, and I'm somewhat promoting another podcast here, but a very famous one. I think it was the Match of the Day podcast where they've spoken about this, haven't they? In terms of, I think, just simply the best players to have graced the Premier League, and the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo came up, the likes of Luis Suarez came up, and I think there's no doubt that, you know, pound for pound, they are better than some of the players who will be on the shortlist who have just been around for longer, but you just didn't see them for long enough. And arguably with Ronaldo, you didn't see him at his absolute peak, but there's no denying that as a player, he was and is one of the best players to have ever played. So yeah, I think that longevity and success and ability are all factored into it. Surely they must be. It can't just be one thing, because if it was just ability, Suarez would be up there. Ronaldo would be up there.
It'd be the Premier League Ability Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly. And if it was just longevity, it would be Gareth Barry, who would be up there, top of the list. But then
James Milner,
correct. Gary Speed, God rest his soul as well, I think would be up there. But taking all of that into account, if you think of someone who, you know, has the ability, has the longevity, has the medals to go with it, then it pains me to say it, but you would probably have to have a Man United player who would it be, the likes of Roy Keane. Someone like that who has
Paul Scholes.
Paul Scholes. Yeah, you'd have to think of those, I guess, before the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo or Suarez. I'm saying Suarez just on ability. Again, he didn't win anything as well. So, yeah, probably United player, because you've had, you know, an Arsenal player, Blackburn and Newcastle player. You've got to have a United player, maybe a Chelsea player in there next.
I was going to say, we haven't said about John Terry or Frank Lampard. I think they're the only other ones who potentially have a bigger shout than Roy Keane, Scholes, Ferdinand maybe. But yeah, anyway, all top names. Well, I guess that takes me on to my next question. I mean, you've kind of touched upon it well there, but I was interestingly listening to Rio Ferdinand's YouTube podcast. And basically, the presenter on that was saying that he would not have Henry or Shearer because they didn't win enough trophies. And I was like, that's absolutely mad. But it does raise an interesting point, which you've kind of just touched upon before. But do you think you need to have trophies and titles and medals to be classed as a sort of great player? Like, does it tarnish your legacy if you don't? Because I personally don't really agree with that view at all. But it was just quite interesting that there were quite a few sort of arguments that were agreeing with it. And I was quite shocked that people had that view. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, if this Hall of Fame is going to grow and grow and grow, as often Hall of Fames do, I haven't seen the video that you're referring to, but to say that they're not deserving to be in the Hall of Fame, the Premier League's all-time goal scorer.
The all-time top goal scorer. That was the thing that got me. I thought, of all the things, surely, with all these arguments that we're saying, and, you know, the things you mentioned before, longevity, ability, etc., surely the person who scored the most goals, and also is a mile out in front of everyone else, by the way, within that time, surely that's the first criteria that could potentially earn someone a spot there.
Yeah, and let's not forget, Alan Shearer has also won the Premier League, as has Thierry Henry multiple times, so that's a bit of a skewed argument. As I say, I haven't seen the video. But yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I think at the team level, I always think that's sort of a valid case. So, you know, Tottenham Hotspur have been spoken about a lot in terms of recent years. They've had a really good squad, really good team, especially under Pochettino, but they never quite took it to the next level in terms of, you know, they were in the Champions League final, they were pushing for the title, they were in, you know, doing well in domestic cups, but they never actually got the trophies to show it. So you can say that they're a good team, but can you say they're a great team? No, because they haven't got the titles to match it. Whereas at the player level, I feel it's a bit more of a harsh one, a bit of a tricky one, because you can have amazing players in not so good teams, and that's not their fault, so to speak, in that, you know, again, I come back to it with Gerrard, but he is the most obvious example that, you know, there's no doubt that if he had have moved to Chelsea, he would have had so many, you know, Premier League titles, and he would have had far more medals than he did, you know, having stayed at Liverpool. But he wanted to stay at Liverpool because it's his hometown club and stuff. So I don't think that then makes him less of a player.
Less of a legend.
Less of a legend in the club, yeah. But his ability as a player can't be questioned any more than if he had have made the move. So I think that's a bit of a flawed argument that it might be at the player level. But as I say, I do think it is at the team level where...
Yeah, it's a good point.
You know, where they didn't actually match their success, their, you know, performances with success.
And yeah, I totally agree. And also, I think, like you said before, another example would be if you're just going on medals alone, then, you know, John O'Shea would be one of the greatest players the Premier League's ever seen, which, you know, John O'Shea had a great career, but, you know, you wouldn't say he was better than Steven Gerrard, would you?
Exactly. But, yeah, you'd have a Hall of Fame worth of Wes Browns.
Wes Browns.
He's a great player, but he has won a lot
throwback.
Of trophies. Yeah,
That's going to be a discussion for another time. We'll think of players who've got loads of trophies who fall into this category. I guess the final thing, comment on this, it's quite a topical one really, isn't it, with Harry Kane's current situation, especially off the back of losing the cup final, the Carabao Cup final on Sunday. There's a lot of chat at the moment, isn't there, about sort of Harry Kane's future and what he's going to decide to do. Is it enough to kind of stay at Spurs, you know, be renowned as a Spurs legend? Or do you think to sort of fulfill his career, he needs to move away and try and win some trophies? You know, I guess only he can answer that question, really, can't he? But what do you think he'll do?
Well, I think he can only answer that question, really, don't you? No, Jacob. I just wanted to balance that back. But I know I do want to hear what you think, Ryan, because I mean, I'm answering all these questions, but I'm very interested to know what you think on this. But I mean, With Harry Kane, I think on a personal level, he wants to try and beat Shearer's record. So in terms of moving and trophies, I think he would want to do it domestically. As in, like, he wouldn't want to move outside of England. I don't think he's got the ability to play for other top European clubs, but I don't think he'd want to, because I think his legacy on a personal level would want to be in this country. So whether that is moving to a Man City or a Man United, I don't know. There's no doubt that if he did make the move, he would have at this moment in time have a greater chance of winning trophies at Man United, certainly at Man City. But who knows? I mean, Tottenham are going to get a new manager soon. It could turn things around completely and they could be pushing for the title. I don't think they will, but they could be pushing for the title in the not so distant future. And then, you know, things can change very quickly. But I don't know. I mean, what do you think on it?
I think that you're exactly spot on. The only thing that I sort of feel with it, I remember I was watching, I think it was Gary Neville's Soccer Box, and he had Matt Le Tissier on as one of the guests, and they were sort of looking back at his career. And Matt Le Tissier said something quite poignant about, you know, people will speculate for years and years to come whether he should have moved elsewhere, should have played for England more, should have been this and that. But the legacy that he has and the sort of status that he has from his favourite club in the world, it is more than any of that, than what he could have wanted. So I don't think there is a right answer, really, isn't there? But I think if Harry Kane stays at Tottenham, I think he could and probably will go on to be regarded as one of their greatest ever players, if not the greatest ever player, depending on what he does. He's probably got the best chance out of anyone at the moment of pushing Shearer's record, hasn't he? Certainly in recent times. So, yeah, I think he'd be absolutely fine to do whatever he chooses, which is sitting on the fence. But yeah, I think there's something quite sweet about being a one club legend. I do think that's quite a good place to be if you can look back and say that you stayed at the club you love more than anyone and had a great career there. So yeah, I don't know is the answer what he'll do. We support Harry in all of his decisions on the Football Fanalytics podcast.
In all of his endeavours. Right, let's crack on with the rest of the podcast. Get on with some recruitment.
In his endeavours.
Okay, so as we mentioned before, we're going to have a episode on recruitment, which we've done a couple of times before, Ryan, on the podcast. But we asked people on Twitter to actually engage with us, and this is going to be dictated by our listeners of who we're going to choose and some positions we're going to choose this week. So yeah, we threw it out to Twitter and said, if anyone has any thoughts of any positions that you'd like us to look at, using the 23 content toolbox. We are in association with 23, Ryan, if I hadn't already told you.
You haven't said that in a while.
I haven't said that in a while.
No. Just a reminder.
Yeah, so we thought this was a good opportunity to dig back into the toolbox and do a bit of recruitment search. So we had quite a few people get in contact with us, didn't we, Ryan?
I was going to say, this was a really good response. Thank you very much to everyone who messaged us. We haven't been able to get through them all because there was actually quite a few. Yeah. So we've picked out some good ones that we thought were an interesting shout out, and also that we tried to vary it up with positions a little bit and different clubs. We've obviously gone mostly Premier League and English League, but you know, I think that there was a good response to that. So I mean, shall I read some out, Mark, and then you're going to delve into the magic toolbox and bring out some solutions?
Let's give it our best shot. Let's go.
Well, let's start off with one. We got a message from Felix who has said, can we look at Everton right back. Now, am I right in thinking that because Seamus Coleman is obviously sort of coming to the latter end of his career, Everton are interested actually in real life, not just hypothetically, in procuring a right back for that position? Is that something that is a legit one?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And I spoke to Felix about this on Twitter to say that it seems that they are certainly in the market for a right back, as you say. And I think, so I did a piece on this with Patrick Boyland, who is the Everton writer at The Athletic, and we did a bit of a data dive into this very position. So we're not going to cover it too much on the podcast, because, and we could link it in the bio, I suppose, of the
piece. I think it'd be rude not to, Mark.
Yeah, let's do it. Of some players who would be of interest. And there was some who are, you know, interesting domestically. So there's the likes of Max Aarons, who's at Norwich and going to be coming up to the Premier League, back up to the Premier League.
I was going to say, yeah, he'll be joining us soon.
Exactly, yeah, from the Championship. Tariq Lamptey, who's an absolute speedster at Brighton, often plays more as a wing-back, but Everton have been known to play wing-backs as well. And one actually who I thought was interesting, who we've spoken about before on the podcast, and I forget who it was for, maybe it was for Arsenal, but it was about a right back. And it was Zeki Celik at Lille.
Yes.
Who we've spoken about before. And he profiles really well as someone who might be, you know, quite suitable for Everton. So that could be a good one. And there's multiple others in there as well. So we can link to the bio there. But yeah, a good shout. And I think Everton certainly are in the market for a right back.
Well, I was listening to the, like you mentioned earlier, I was listening to the Match of the Day Top 10 podcast.
Yeah.
And they were talking about bargains, top 10 bargains. And I didn't realise that Seamus Coleman was procured from an Irish club for £60,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
£60,000, that's less than half the players in the Premier League earn in a week.
I know.
And what an amazing servant he's been to Everton Football Club.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's nothing that, you know, it's nothing down to his ability that he's getting, you know, competition for his position. I just think it's a shrewd way to just slowly pass on the torch, really. You know, he's getting to an age where he might not be as able to play every week. He's had some injury issues this season as well. So, I mean, pound for pound, there's not too many better, actually, in terms of that price to the service that he's given, as you say. So, we've got an alternative for Seamus Coleman there. We'll link it to the bio, but that was a nice one.
Fantastic stuff. Another one that we've picked out, these are quickfire requests we've got here, is from an account called Fantasy EFL Championship Previews. And they've asked us about a potential left back for Reading FC. Now, I'm not going to lie, I don't know an awful lot about Reading FC. I haven't seen a lot of them this season. Have they got a left back missing, or is this like for a backup? Why do Reading need a left back?
Yeah, well, this is a really interesting one because Omar Richards, who's their current left back, he's 23 years old. He's actually going to Bayern Munich in the summer.
To Bayern Munich?
Yeah, so I haven't actually got round to looking at a replacement for Omar Richards. But it's not too often that you get a Champions League club shopping in the market in the Championship. But I do think that a lot of teams in the Bundesliga do keep an eye on the Championship because it is, you know, across the whole of Europe, it is a strong league. It's probably on parallels with the, probably famous last words here, but the likes of, you know, the Portuguese league and the Dutch league. It's a very competitive league, and, you know, a lot of players also get scouted to come up to the Premier League as well. So it makes sense that, you know, a Bundesliga club would be in the market for someone like Omar Richards, but Bayern Munich is a real stretch, and he'd be an understudy to Alphonso Davies, so he's got work on his hands.
Well, I was going to say, considering that they've got one of the most exciting and, quite frankly, explosive, pacey left-backs in the world, that's a big compliment to Omar Richards that he's been handpicked to sort of go and sit an understudy for. What an opportunity.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it is very much going to be an understudy, but it's something where you can't turn down that opportunity. So
no.
It's a really interesting shout as a recruitment option that Fantasy EFL Championship Previews has asked us to do. I haven't got around to the replacement for Reading, for the Reading left back, but it's a really interesting one because Omar Richards is on his way to Germany in the summer.
Absolutely. Let me hit you with another quick fire one then that you definitely will have an opinion on. Rithwick has asked us to look into a replacement for Liverpool number 9, which now I don't actually, to be fair, know if he's asking as a replacement or if he's thinking understudy for Roberto Firmino potentially. But I'm quite interested in this one because he's not exactly a traditional number 9 to replace, is he, Roberto Firmino, or to find someone similar to. So who would, if Liverpool were in the market for a number 9, I know they've obviously got Jota and Salah and Mane, obviously, as the front four. But who would kind of be on their radar, do you think, to replace Firmino?
Yeah, this is a difficult one because you almost want someone who's flexible enough to be able to drop deep and almost do the Firmino role, but also be a bit more clinical in front of goal, let's be frank, because
yeah.
Firmino hasn't been that. So the one that I think would be fairly useful, is who has been tipped and touted, but I think he profiles really well, is Brill Mbolo, who is at Borussia Mönchengladbach. They play really exciting brand of football anyway, Mönchengladbach. So I think he'd be kind of up to speed with the pace and the intensity that Liverpool would play at.
Is it a similar pressing style that they have at Gladbach?
Yeah, they're really good at, you know, winning the ball up high, and they're quite intense in their play. So I think that Mbolo could be a good shout. I think he was rumoured with Spurs at one point as well, but I think he would be a really good shout. He's only 24, so it sort of fits with the profile of someone that Liverpool would go for in that sort of age bracket. So he'd be my pick, just for these quickfire ones. That'd be my one, Brill Mbolo.
Fantastic. I'm going to hit you with a final quickfire one before we come on to actually delving into the 23 content toolbox. Maram has asked us to look at a Manchester United centre midfielder. Now, this one's an interesting one because there's been a lot of chat of late, hasn't there, about the Fred McTominay, or McFred, if you'd like to describe it that way, double pivot combination. Now, both Fred and McTominay obviously have their plus points. You wouldn't necessarily say that either of them have absolutely nailed down that position, and it feels like they're sort of used, doesn't it, to complement each other in their weaknesses almost. Mm-hmm. Now, it feels to me like if Manchester United were to look for a central midfielder, you'd kind of want a hybrid of the two and someone who can kind of do a bit of both of what they both lack. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. I think that Solskjaer is almost, I don't know this to be true, but it feels as though Solskjaer's playing two as defensive midfielders rather than one, more out of necessity than choice. I think if he had his way over time, kind of as you say, he would just have the one holding it and almost play a 4-3-3 if he had the opportunity to. But I don't think he trusts any player to almost be the single pivot at any one point. So over time, I think he would like to have someone in that sort of number six role and not have the two of them, as you say. So who that would be, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, only this past week I've done a piece on Eduardo Camavinga, who is doing really well at Rennes in Ligue 1 in France. Do you like my accent there?
I did, yeah.
A young 18-year-old who's an absolute starlet, but I don't think he would be the type of player to be that one. And he's not, he can play a holding role, but he can also play in sort of more central midfield and can be a bit more box to box. But someone with that, maybe that discipline to be the holding role, you know, I'm not too sure. I think no one would turn down the likes of Camavinga because he's such an exciting young player. But again, this is another piece that I helped Carl Anker with at The Athletic, of course, the Manchester United writer, about who could be a good replacement for, in that single defensive midfield role. So again, we can link to that one as well. This is just a Mark Carey promotion.
This is going to be an episode of Mark Carey's Greatest Hits. This is fantastic.
The one shout out I quickly do as well is that Ninad, who is a friend of the pod, has done a really nice piece recently about a Manchester United centre midfielder. And I think it's a two-parter. And he's got one out there. And there's another part coming soon. So I think look out for that one as well.
Basically, what we're doing, we're outsourcing the questions to, you know, your pieces and other people. This is a great way, an efficient way of us working and also sharing what other people are doing. So I think basically we're onto a winner here. But what we can do now then, so let's delve into the toolbox that is at our disposal. So we've been asked by Ben to look into a Manchester City left back, and we've been asked by an account called Usselman Artworks to look into an Arsenal left back. So to me, it feels like we should kill two analytics birds with one stone here. And look at some left backs who might fit well for both teams potentially.
Yeah, and I mean, Man City and Arsenal have their different style, but I think ultimately someone who is kind of good enough to play in the Premier League, to play in the upper echelons of the Premier League. Just so I'm covering Man City and Arsenal, because at the moment there is a big gap between them. But I think that they
on the borders of the echelon.
Yeah, I know. They would be in the market potentially for similar sorts of profiles of players. Someone who's obviously good on the ball, able to get forward and support the attack, but also, you know, good defensively as well. So yeah, as you say, it's a good opportunity to profile players who would potentially fall in both categories for Man City and Arsenal. So yeah, what I've done is gone into the 23 content toolbox. I've gone into the Discover tool. I've gone into the rating search. And we've spoken about this before in previous episodes, haven't we? Of just how you can start to weight certain attributes to how much importance that you want to place on it. Do some filters on it. So I've looked across the top five European leagues. I've got a sort of a left back who's going to complete a lot of passes, obviously very comfortable on the ball, complete a lot of final third passes as well, comfortable getting forward, a lot of crosses completed, so obviously able to get a good ball in, play through passes quite a lot. Obviously, you want to make sure that they're accurate in those passes, so high on passing accuracy. And I've put a filter of a player who's less than 26.
So we're looking for quite an attacking-based left-back here, aren't we, really?
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, if you're going to be playing for the likes of, hopefully, Arsenal and City, you want to be able to get forward as much as being able to defend, really. I mean, I haven't put too much stock in defending, weirdly, but I think that's the modern game now, that we're just thinking about left-backs as an attacking force, but mainly looking at their sort of passing attributes. So I guess it's somewhere in between. But and the age profile said that they're, you know, they've got good potential resale value. Less than 26. And the good news is that the type of players who are profiled, it makes sense to the sort of player that you'd maybe be looking for. So Ben Chilwell was very high in the list. So, you know, that sort of profile of player. Ben Chilwell was a very well-established Premier League player and Chelsea. And interestingly, Oleksandr Zinchenko was higher there as well. So
job done.
Yeah, exactly. So someone that City have already got. So it shows that we're on the right track here in terms of the toolbox, which is great, very encouraging.
So with Zinchenko then, do you see him as a sort of good enough caliber for the City left back position?
Yeah, I mean, he's nominally a central midfielder who has been sort of pushed out to left back. So I think it was only recently, I think it was the first time this season that he'd played in the middle, actually in his typical position. I think that was a couple of weeks ago, and it was like a big thing because it's like finally he's playing in the position that he's supposed to. But he is, you know, for Man City, he has obviously been a left back, but I can sort of see why they'd want, you know, an alternative. Obviously they've got Mendy there as well, who hasn't flattered to deceive. I think he's done okay at times, but he's not the player that, obviously Joao Cancelo doing so well at right back now. Obviously, they've got Kyle Walker as well. I think their right side is really strong. I think they potentially would want to make the left side stronger as well. So I don't necessarily know whether they are in for a left back, but I think it's an interesting question to be posed for our recruitment search.
For sure. I also feel sorry for Zinchenko, by the way. That reminds me of when I started off playing football and wanted to play as a number 10, and I got put a right back just because it wasn't good enough. You feel sorry for the lad.
He is the professional football version of you then. He's blonde
basically,
as well.
Yeah. Well, basically the same person, but
basically,
you know,
the same, yeah. So they profiled well. That, you know, that shows, as I say, we're on the right lines. And someone who profiled well, who again we've spoken about someone from the Bundesliga in terms of Breel Mbolo, but for a completely different position, we've got Daley Sinkgraven, who plays for Bayer Leverkusen. Obviously in the Bundesliga, who is 25, and I think profiles quite neatly. I mean, there's still potential for him to obviously get a lot better. So I, no disrespect, probably say more for Arsenal than for Man City here, even though we've just spoken about Man City. But he's someone who, does kind of ticks the box for all of those things that we spoke about. And particularly good at getting the ball into the final third, making a lot of final third passes, and good at sort of through balls as well. So maybe less so in terms of the crossing element, but getting the ball forward and progressing the play really neatly could be a good outside shout for someone to again come from the Bundesliga.
German football's where it's at the moment, isn't it, really? Is that a silly thing to say? It feels like they're sort of on top of sort of stylistic trends and just got very good players in that league at the moment. And do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think we've spoken about this before with, you know, the likes of Timo Werner and Kai Havertz obviously coming to the Premier League. And, you know, I think probably 10 years ago, or maybe a bit longer, it was all about the Spanish football and how great that was. And I think it just goes in cycles around Europe. And I definitely say that German football is the one that's in the ascendancy and, you know, at the top of their game at the moment. And yeah, I think it's also a league where moving to the Premier League, you've got kind of the easiest adaptation, I think I'd say, more so than the likes of Italy or Spain at the moment, where they've got enough kind of the physical attributes to not be too shocked by moving into the Premier League. So I think it is quite a lucrative market for Premier League teams to shop in, yeah.
Ignoring Timo Werner, but
it's well, comments, his but expected yeah. goals are good. He just needs to put them away.
And we have said before, Mark, that's what it's all about. It all comes down to expected goals.
And managed to get our expected goals quota in for the episode. Brilliant. Tick. Okay, we really are flying through them, aren't we, Ryan? We've got through quite a lot there. So I think we've got time for a couple more. Have you got any more to fire at me?
I have indeed, mate. I have indeed. I liked this one. I thought this one was interesting. We've been asked by Top Bins Talk to look at a Brighton centre forward. Now, there's obviously been a lot of great chat this season, hasn't there, about Brighton's expected goals are obviously been really, really good all season. But obviously, there's sometimes a little bit of a blunt blade finishing them off. So, you know, if we were to look in for someone who was going to spearhead the Brighton attack to potentially just give them that tiny bit more sharpness in front of goal, who might we look at?
Yeah, this is an interesting one because you've seen it, you know, multiple times with certain teams where they can play, you know, good football, but they just haven't got that player to finish it off, as you say. And I think Aston Villa were probably a good example of that last season, where obviously they were fighting relegation. They needed a consistent forward and obviously a strong forward who's going to put those chances away. And then obviously they went and got Ollie Watkins, and look how well they're doing this season as well. So
absolutely,
if you have it's an obvious thing to say, if you have a good forward, you're going to do well. But it's even more so with Brighton because they have got great technical players. They've got great build-up play. They create a lot of chances, but as you say, they don't have anyone to finish it off. So someone who can do that within their budget as well is going to be quite a challenge. Now, I've dug into the numbers in the toolbox, which, by the way, I forgot to mention before, we are using Y-Scout data for this, for anyone who's asking.
Always good to know.
With the toolbox, we can sort of only look into a certain type of league. So we looked across the top five European leagues, and including the Championship as well. And Brighton may look into other markets as well, but I'm just going to focus on these leagues for now. And again, I did a bit of a search, and I thought, because obviously, yeah, Brighton are good technically as a team, they're good off the ball as well. I just tried to pick someone who's an established Premier League player who could be similar to, who we could look into as a similar profile of player. And I chose Patrick Bamford here as a similarity search in the toolbox to, you know, someone who, yeah, who does get into high quality areas, who's very sort of good off the ball and has a good goal return rate, essentially. And a few players came up, some who are not relevant in terms of Mauro Icardi at PSG. Is not going to go to Brighton. Sorry about that, Brighton fan.
I'd love to see that,
though. As much as we'd love to see it. So I tried to sort of filter it a little bit just to think of something that's a bit more attainable. And it's maybe an outside shout, but 24 years old, Simon Banza, who plays for Lens, if that's how you pronounce it, in the French league, of course. He's 24. His goal return rate is 0.32 goals per 90. So you're looking at someone who's able to score one goal every three games in terms of his returns, which isn't too bad. Someone who profiles highly for, you know, getting a shot away. So comfortable, obviously, yeah, in front of goal, as you should be for a striker. And has frequent touches in the box as well. So, you know, Brighton are able to progress the ball into dangerous areas. They just need someone to, as you say, to finish it off. So, he's someone who's good on the ball, someone who's good off the ball, similar to that what I said before in terms of Patrick Bamford's intensity of closing players down. So could be an outside shout. I think French league at the moment is again, we spoke about a lucrative league in the Bundesliga, but for a cut price, I think the French league has got a bit of a sale going on with everything that's been going on recently. I don't know if you know about this, Ryan.
I don't know. What's that?
So the French league is basically, I think they had this TV deal that was sort of nailed on. I think it's called Media Pro. And the whole deal was supposed to, you know, help all the clubs, and they were sort of set for this. And it's fallen through, basically. So a lot of clubs, as well as coronavirus, a lot of clubs are in something of a financial crisis. So they're having to sell most of their kind of prized assets, or some of their prized assets, to make some money back. So all of the bigger clubs and bigger leagues are flocking around and trying to see how they can basically maximize this and profit from it. So where possible, they're looking for for some value in the market, as everyone is at this moment in time. So it could be a good way for Brighton to make the most of their budget as well.
Everything must go. I see. Yeah.
Poundland.
Okay then, Mark, I've got one more for you. We'll round it off with a good one. So it's no secret this year that Spurs have been struggling for a centre-half. And as in, Davinson Sanchez hasn't really been in good form, has he? You know, Eric Dier has been in and out with Mourinho. There was obviously quite a lot of blame from Mourinho as regards to his centre-halves. So Grant has asked us this very question. Who might we look at, or who is in contention, do you think, for Spurs to sign to sort of shore up their defence?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I think that their poor performance is partly due, I think, to Mourinho's setup and tactics. So the likes of Eric Dier, who has been really strong the past few years, but not so much this season. Alderweireld, okay, yes, he's getting older, but he's still a very good player. Joe Roden, I think, is the future of Spurs as at least one of the two centre-backs. So it may be that they could almost improve from within, certainly with better coaching and a better system and an established system. But I do take the point that they probably are in the market for a centre-half. So I kind of reverse engineered this one a little bit because I've been looking at who they've sort of been rumoured with and who potentially I've heard they are in for. Both of them are players who are already in the Premier League, which makes life easier for us. One of them is Fulham's on loan central defender, Joachim Anderson. Another is Lewis Dunk at Brighton, having just spoken about Brighton. Big Lewis Dunk. So what I thought I'd do is, rather than using the discovery tool for 23, to just compare them and use a dynamic radar, which we can post after this episode is out, to compare the two kind of, you know, like for like on some key defensive attributes.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah, so I've put a number of defensive attributes in there, and it's interesting actually. I think it obviously depends what sort of profile of player they want, but I think Anderson, despite obviously Fulham struggling this season, they have obviously improved a lot throughout the season, and Anderson has been kind of key to that. I think he's a real leader for Fulham. I think he's been the captain for the team despite being on loan from Lyon, only 24 years old. So I think you'd almost want Anderson just for that reason as well, in terms of a young centre-back who's obviously got more years playing for your team, rather than Dunk, who is 29, a very well-established Premier League player, but 29, you know, you're thinking of someone, how long can you keep him at the top for? So already I'm thinking maybe leaning towards Anderson, but I think the numbers kind of back it up as well in terms of Anderson just having that edge on Dunk. He's won more aerial duels. He's got more ball recoveries, more interceptions.
That's interesting, because I thought that aerial duels are Lewis Dunk's thing, really, aren't they?
Yeah, true. And I suppose I'm not sure as to how much with the toolbox, how many they've contested as well. So it might be that the aerial percentage might be higher for Dunk, but it doesn't have that on one of the options here. But it may be a consequence of how many they've actually engaged with here as well. And it may also be that, the likes of these defensive numbers might be a product of the amount of possession between the two teams as well. So I'd like to look into that in a little bit more detail. But I do think as well, in more general terms, that, given the age profile of Anderson compared to Dunk, I think that he would probably be more of a shrewd buy for Spurs as centre-back. So my pick is, Joachim Anderson.
Fantastic. That sounds like a very good option.
Right. Okay. So that was quite a few that we got through. Some quick, some a little bit slower, but we got through as many of those requests as we could. So thanks to everyone, as always, for sending through their thoughts. People know where to find us now, Ryan. We barely need to tell them that we are at FanalyticsPod on Twitter and Instagram.
But we will anyway.
We will anyway. Or, of course, you can email us fanalytics.pod@gmail.com. Almost don't need to tell them anymore. But what we're doing recently as well is a new little thing, which hopefully people will enjoy. We've got some new listeners now, I think. It's growing all the time, this podcast, which is great to see. So for anyone who's not been able to catch some of our early episodes, what we're doing every Monday is we're diving into the Football Fanalytics archives, which Ryan is dangerously happy that we're calling FFA.
It's not even very good. It's just like the FA.
It's
just the FFA.
It's simply an abbreviation. That's all I see it as.
Yeah, it's just letters,
it's
mate.
It's just
actually.
Letters. But we're going to post one of those every Monday to throw back to an episode from the back catalogue. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to the early ones, then we're just going to do a bit of promo around each one. So we started on Monday with episode 6, which we are really quite pleased with at the time, weren't we, Ryan, in terms of the analytics side of it, a bit of good chat there, which was the simple pass and all about how you can use analytics to quantify passing in a bit more detail. So check it out if you haven't already. Hopefully many people have.
You'll find that on Twitter.
Follow us on Twitter, you know what to do. Listen, I think that's all for this week. I'm all recruited out, so we're gonna go for a lie down. Don't know about you, Ryan. Thanks everybody as always for listening. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we will see you next time. Podcast Network.